Well, I was given the topic of discussing the fossil record. Yeah, probably. The fossil record of the local universe as seen in the observed components of the local group, which I think is rather a long topic for a 25-minute talk, so obviously I'm not going to say anything and everything. But I would like to touch briefly on what I think are the new observations of interest to this group. I'm going to go through, first of all, I'll focus mostly on the Milky Way galaxy, but I'd also like to say a little bit maybe about M31 and a little bit about the satellite galaxies of the Milky Way. I'd like to discuss the different stellar components of the Milky Way, the central bulge, the stellar halo, mostly the old thin disk, since we're talking about the fossil record, and a bit about the thick disk. This is just a little cartoon just to give people who are perhaps not so familiar with this just a broad overview of what we're talking about. So this is an edge-on view of the Milky Way. The stellar halo, mostly traced here by the globular clusters. It's old. We're going to be discussing the evidence away from these mean properties, which is the mean properties. It's old. It's metal poor. It's not very luminous. Total luminosity about 10 to the 9. Very low surface brightness at the solar neighborhood. And the stars are on orbits of low angular momentum. The bulge in the center, we'll be discussing that it's old. It's metal rich. It's much more luminous than the halo, maybe a factor of 10 or so. Very centrally concentrated, has a scale length of a few hundred parsecs. Again, it's fairly low angular momentum, consistent with contraction to the center and spin up. The thin disk, obviously this is where there's ongoing star formation, but there's a very broad age range. We'll be discussing what this means for galaxy formation. The disk started to form a long time ago. Obviously it's metal rich at the solar neighborhood, high angular momentum orbits, fairly luminous and has a fairly extended scale length. And we've already heard a little bit about how the large scale length of disks has some problems for cold dark matter. What's the thick disk? Well, it's a component that maybe you didn't learn about when you did Astronomy 101 or whatever. It is a separate component from the thin disk. I'll show some new observations showing this. It's old. This is also important for constraining theories of galaxy formation. It has intermediate metallicity and kinematics compared to the thin disk and the halo. And if we just look at the disk around us and count stars, locally, essentially everything is in the thin disk, with about 5% thick disk, and less than 1% stars locally are in the halo. So what's new about the bulge? I think generally accepted that the bulge really is a separate component from the stellar halo, but just bear in mind, I told you the surface brightness of the stellar halo at the solar neighborhood is very low. When we look at external galaxies, we're really tracing the bulge, not the stellar halo. Photometric studies in the infrared have revealed that the central bulge of our galaxy is triaxial, which is consistent with what's been inferred from the kinematics of cold gas towards the center. You have to go from the observed surface brightness distribution to a 3D shape. This is in the center of the galaxy where there's a lot of dust still that could still affect the infrared. But the most reliable determination, I think, of the 3D shape is that due to Binney et al. In 97, which is x to y to z. Obviously, x and y are in the plane, z perpendicular to the plane of the disk, is 1 to about 0.6 to 0.4. So it's not a terribly triaxial system. Bar-like kinematics have not actually been detected to any significance in the stars of the bulge, but the kinematics are not inconsistent with this kind of mild bar. And indeed, the stellar kinematics of the bulge in general are consistent with it being our bulge being an isotropic oblate rotator, which is consistent with what we see for external bulges. There's actually been some interesting work recently by Walter Danin suggesting that if we were to look at stars in the disk, perhaps we do see the signature of the forcing of the bar. I said that the bulge was old. This has been in the literature for a long time, for example, Ortolani et al. 95, but it is clear that if you get a color magnitude diagram towards the center of the galaxy, there is a significant intermediate age component. Some people have said that this is actually part of the bulge, and the bulge has had a fairly large spread in star formation. Other people, Ortolani et al., would have argued that this was foreground disk. There's just been an interesting paper by Feltzing and Gilmore, who've actually looked at the color magnitude diagrams from the Hubble Space Telescope in various lines of sight towards the center of the galaxy. The outline here is just the Kobe bulge, just to give you a feel for where these fields are. they've looked at the color magnitude diagram in the circles and in the squares. There is a combination of globular cluster fields and then the star fields. Just out of interest, of course, the triangles here are the fields of the Ibata and Gilmore survey of the bulge, which serendipitously found the Sagittarius dwarf, which is here. Anyway, so the idea is to look at the color magnitude diagrams, and you'll be able to distinguish, because of the very different spatial structures of the bulge in the foreground disk, to distinguish from the variation of the intermediate age component as a function of line of sight, whether it is truly associated with the bulge or with the disk of the galaxy.
Oops.
And the conclusion is that the bulge is indeed old, with age of about 12 billion years. From the color magnitude diagrams, the spread in age is rather poorly constrained. Partially, there is a very broad metallicity distribution in the bulge. But we can say it's definitely not got a young component, but the spread that's older than this is, from these data, not that well constrained. So I said there that there is a broad metallicity distribution. Let me just remind you that it's broad and it's below solar metallicity. Here's a plot of this. This is from McWilliam and Rich, 1994, where the hatched area is the metallicity distribution in Bada's window. They got a shell spectra of a small sample of K giants to recalibrate the lower resolution spectra that Mike Rich had. I was just talking to Mike Rich over coffee, and he has got a lot more data using Keck, and this peak is probably not going to change very much. A few of the stars are moving more metal-rich, but we can ask Mike to perhaps tell us some more later. Anyway, there's 2 points here. It's broad, and although it's metal-rich, it's only about as metal-rich as we see in the solar neighborhood. That's what the solid histogram outline are K-giants in the solar neighborhood. So the bulge, although, as I say, it's about has stars that are fairly metal-rich, the peak metallicity in the bulge is not that different from in the solar neighborhood. And just to make a little aside here, it has a broader distribution function than in the solar neighborhood, which will obviously tell you something about. Oh, this is just saying that if one were to accrete a whole load of globular clusters, as had been proposed by yourself and other people, then that might also give you a low metallicity tail. That kind of distribution is not seen only in Bada's window. It's also seen several kiloparsecs out from the center. This is a plot from Ibata and Gilmore. Again, this is the sample that was used to find the Sagittarius dwarf, but actually also was used to analyze the bulge of the galaxy. Again, fairly broad distribution with a peak that's somewhat below solar. If you go further in, where you're now having to use infrared data, then you do find a more metal-rich peak, something more like solar metallicity, and also as you go further into the center, you do start to see ongoing star formation, but then we have to become a little bit of a semantics, what's disk and what's bulge once we're in there. Let me just point this out, that lack of intermediate age in youngish stars, it's become quite popular these days to look at models of bulge formation from buckling a disk. This says that if we did that, because there does seem to be ongoing star formation in the disk, that we had to buckle the disk a long time ago. I'm not sure if anybody's going to talk about bar buckling models. I said that there wasn't that much information from the color magnitude diagram about the spread older than 12 billion years. In principle, elemental abundances can tell us something about this. For example, people have argued that an enhanced alpha element signature would mean that there was enrichment by predominantly type 2 supernovae, which are the core collapse endpoints of massive stars, happen on very short timescales. Type 1a supernovae happen on longer timescales. If you only see the signature of type 2 supernovae, that means star formation only happened for a very short time. The extant data for the field bulge stars is confusing. I understand from Mike Rich that it's still confusing with these new spectra.
No, it's not.
It's not confusing for Mike, but it's confusing for the people that derive yields from supernovae, because different elements are showing different trends. Perhaps there's a clear signature of alpha element enhancement in magnesium, but it's also seen in titanium, and then silicon and calcium are not as enhanced. Enhanced means above the solar value. This is the logarithm with respect to the sun. So zero here is solar. Enhanced, we'd expect to be up here at about 0.4 or so. So some seem to suggest that there is indeed a short duration of star formation. Others are not, as I say, as you would expect, given what we understand of supernova. There's been an interesting result from Beatrice Barbouy et al. Of stars not in the field of the bulge now, but in globular clusters, and they find that they are actually enhanced in alpha elements. And if you add together the enhancement in alpha elements with what we measure for the iron abundance, you get an overall metallicity of about the solar value. But this, of course, is in globular clusters and not in the field of the bulge, so it's a little bit unclear what implication this has for the field bulge. But let's just note that so far there's nothing inconsistent with a normal solar neighborhood massive star IMF. There had been some suggestions earlier when it was believed that the mean chemical abundance in the bulge was well above solar metallicity that you might have to change the stellar mass function. But I think there's no need to invoke that, isn't there? The faint end of the stellar luminosity function in the low mass IMF has recently been determined by Manuela Zoccoli et al. This is using NICMOS observations on the Hubble Space Telescope. Very interesting result. The bottom line is that the low mass IMF is normal. What does normal mean? Well, it agrees with that of globular clusters, ones where we think what we're measuring has been unaffected by dynamical evolution of the mass segregation and such things inside globular clusters, and also the solar neighborhood as measured by Kraupa et al. Over the same mass range. This is just a plot taken from their paper. The galactic bulge are the filled circles here. This is a line to guide the eye, which has a slope of -1.35. I'll remind you that that is not the saltpeter slope. In this notation, saltpeter is -2.35, so we have rolled over from saltpeter. And then these are globular clusters where we think we don't have to worry about mass segregation and the loss of low mass stars. This is a globular cluster where we have seen a lot of change of the mass function. And there really is rather good agreement here. And as I say, this slope is the one that was obtained by Kraupa et al. For also field stars in the solar neighborhood. So I think the bottom line there is that, yes, the recent evidence is agreeing with earlier evidence that the bulge is old. Perhaps the bulge formed in a very short duration of star formation, but I think it's still not completely clear. But the mass function seems to have been constant, or at least it's the same in the bulge as in the disk. Let me just turn quickly to the stellar halo. And I think where there is a consensus that the stellar halo formed through disruption and merging of shallow potential well star-forming regions, what's not, I think, their consensus yet is what sort of shallow potential well star-forming regions are these? Are they formed through fragmentation, something to do with the genes mass along the lines that Mike Fall and Martin Rees suggested to form protoglobular clusters? Or are these actually the building blocks of cold dark matter or things like this? Perhaps there's a contribution of both. What's the most important? When did the stars form in these? We know that most of the halo is old, but exactly how did the stars form? When were they disrupted? How were they disrupted? Through perhaps an internal, the strong stellar feedback that we've been hearing about, or were they disrupted by tides from the overall potential well of the galaxy? Did they merge with each other? What's the relation to the dwarf spheroidals we see now, to globular clusters, what's population 3, etc., etc.? I'm going to say a few words about what fraction of the halo is accreted. And by accreted, I mean minor mergers between the Milky Way and other systems after the main galaxy is in place. There's been some interesting observational advances in that. So let's just see. I think the bulk of the stellar halo is old. Old meaning, of course, as you know, stellar ages are somewhat uncertain, and old can change from being 12 billion years to 18 billion years, depending on whose isochrones you use and when you had them normalized. But it's old, and it shows enrichment by only type 2 supernovae. And what we were just saying, this suggests that they formed in systems that didn't form stars for very long, consistent with having many independent star-forming regions. I just wanted to remind people that at present, globular clusters are around only a few percent of the halo. But we're talking mostly here about the field halo. I'll mention a little bit about globular clusters. So it's old in the mean and shows only type 2 supernovae. The interesting thing, I did mention also too, that the halo doesn't contain very much of the luminosity of the galaxy, but it contains a lot of interesting signatures telling us how the galaxy might form and how it might still be evolving. And a lot of the stars we'll be looking at are anomalous stars, the deviations away from saying that it's old and shows type 2 supernovae element ratios. So anomalous halo stars with low values of the alpha element ratios have been observed for the last few years, have been identified. I think maybe the first time they were identified was in a sample of disk and halo stars with overlapping metallicities. This is an investigation of when does the halo end and when does the disk start. So we have metal-rich halo stars at about minus one, where again this is a tenth of solar, and metal-poor stars for the disk. This is taken from a paper of mine with Jerry Gilmore, but it's taking mostly the data from this sample of Bisson and Schuster. 5 minutes, oh dear. Really? Disk or halo, it's based on the kinematics. I think that's only been... Okay. It won't be. So these halo stars here have anomalously low values of the alpha elements. The normal halo is up here showing enhanced values. You might say, well, so what? And this is consistent with having enrichment from type 1A supernovae, adding iron from type 1As. One of the reasons this is interesting is that the element ratios and also the fact that this tends to be at the metal-rich end of the halo are consistent with the kinds of element ratios and overall abundances that we observe now in dwarf companion galaxies of the Milky Way. So this led to suggestions that perhaps these anomalous halo stars are not really part of the halo sort of as formed in our galaxy, but have been accreted fairly recently in dwarf companion galaxies. Let me just show a little that people are now measuring elemental abundances in the dwarf spheroidal companion galaxies of the Milky Way and finding very interesting results. The reference to Gilmore and Wise was that we had said that this was the kind of pattern you might get. This is from Tammy Smecker-Hain and Andy McWilliam and shows stars from the Sagittarius dwarf, which are the filled stars, and then from other dwarf spheroidal companions. But we see fairly high metallicities and fairly low values of these elemental abundances. From their kinematics, they actually are in the Sagittarius dwarf, and from their location in the color magnitude diagram. One complication, I think, is that also these low alpha halo stars tended to be on very radial orbits, so they have fairly large apocenters but very small pericenters, and at least it's not obvious to me that that was what you would expect if you were accreting stars from dwarf spheroidal galaxies. And perhaps this is can also be explained by just saying that if I have fragmentation in the halo, perhaps I would form systems of deeper potential wells that could probe closer inside the galaxy. Also, there has been a study of if I just look at a sample of stars which is on these extreme halo orbits, what do the element ratios tend to be? And the answer so far, this is from Stevens, is that the halo stars with extreme orbits, a quote from his paper, are indistinguishable from the inner halo. So anomalous element ratios are not a general property of the extreme halo. I said most of the halo was old, but let's look at what we have. This is relative ages of galactic globular clusters. This shows, this is from Rosenberg et al. All the metal poor ones all have the same age. They're very careful here not to actually assign an age, but we know that age is old. They all have the same old age. But then as I get to higher metallicities, it does appear that there's some spread coming in and there are some younger globular clusters. This is also the kind of thing that you see if you try to understand what are the age distributions of stars in the field halo of the galaxy. I won't have time to go into this in great detail, but this is a plot of metallicity versus color. Stars that are bluer than a turn-off age here, these are turn-off isochrones, the colors of the turn-off of a 15 gigayear isochrone. A star that's bluer of that is a candidate for being younger. So you can see the turn-off color here for most of the stellar halo is consistent with being old, but there are, as you get to higher metallicity, stars that are consistent with being a few gigayears younger. And you find that perhaps 10% or so of the stellar halo is consistent with being several gigayears younger than the bulk of the halo. The other thing that has been an advance in the last few years is that Hubble Space Telescope and ground-based data has allowed us to really try and analyze the star formation history of the dwarf satellite companion galaxies to the Milky Way, and we can then compare that with what we see in the halo. And what you find is that although there are some dwarf companions, like the Ursa Minor dwarf spheroidal, which has an age distribution really only old, most of the dwarf spheroidal companions of the Milky Way actually have a significant spread in ages. This is a weighted sum of Leo 1, Leo 2, Ursa Minor, Draco, and the Carina dwarf spheroidals. This obviously is Ursa Minor. Essentially, each dwarf spheroidal has its own star formation history. Add them together, there's a very strong intermediate age, even youngish stellar population, saying that if I want to accrete dwarf galaxies, assuming this is typical of what a dwarf galaxy would do if it was left by itself, something along this line, I have to accrete them either only ones that are like Ursa Minor, other than 10%, or I have to do the accretion early on in the phase of the galaxy evolution. So accretion of stars from satellite galaxies to form the bulk of the halo have to have happened a long time ago, and then we get into a little bit of a semantics that if it's happening that long ago, when the galaxy potential is still forming, it's perhaps not to be viewed as accretion, but more just part of galaxy formation. However, the Milky Way is clearly interacting with its satellites, and tidal streams associated with the Sagittarius dwarf spheroidal, which is on a very nearby orbit, or it's on an orbit with a very close pericenter, only about 15 gigayears, have actually been identified, which I think is very interesting. I'm sure Simon's going to say some more about this, but and I was talking to him about this a little bit at coffee. My interpretation of the latest simulations that he's done with Amina Helmi is that the constraints we have from what is the mass of the halo outside the pericenter of Sagittarius' orbit, which is about 15 kiloparsecs, and the fact that we still see quite a significant remnant of the Sagittarius dwarf would argue for significant dark matter in an extended halo. And also very interestingly, candidate extratidal stars have been identified around the Carina dwarf spheroidal, suggesting that it's really being disrupted very significantly. Let me just remind you, though, Carina has a total luminosity of about 5 times 10 to the 5. But we are seeing ongoing interactions. Simon will talk more about this too. I'm just going to mention it. We're also seeing evidence that there are anomalous kinematics. We're seeing moving groups in the halo. So we've seen evidence that there's a spread of ages. We're actually perhaps seeing some tidal streamers. We're actually seeing this in the kinematics too. The actual fraction of the stellar halo that this might be contributing to in the solar neighborhood is a little bit in flux just now, depending on whose data set you actually use. But perhaps, you know, 5% or so of this halo at the solar neighborhood could be part of this moving group. I did just want to show up. We're definitely seeing tidal streamers from globular clusters. And, of course, this has been suggested by some other people, including Mike Fall. The present retinue of globular clusters is only some tiny fraction of what we started with. Probably have all been disrupted. This is just a nice picture from Georges Milan et al. Omega Sen globular cluster, seeing tidal tails coming from it. And I have to stop. but I do want to say a few things. I was going to talk about, people can ask me about, but I was going to talk about, are faint white dwarfs baryonic dark matter in the halo? What is the luminosity function in dwarf spheroidal galaxies? I'll just flash this up. Again, it seems to be completely consistent with what we see in normal systems around us, in the disk, in the bulge, in globular clusters, despite having a very large dark matter fraction. What do we know about the thick disk? The thick disk has a scale height of about 2 kilo, has a scale height of about 1.5 kiloparsecs. The best mechanism we have to form the thick disk is that it formed as a result of a minor merger. Here's just one from Hector Velasquez and Simon White. You start off with a thin disk, you drop in a satellite galaxy, you puff up the thin disk. Interesting things here for galaxy formation. The thick disk is old. Similar plot to before, just take away from this, the thick disk is old. I'm just about to get my... The thick disk is old. There haven't been many mergers since 12 billion years ago, and I think that places very strong constraints on theories of galaxy formation. Also note that the thin disk itself contains some old stars. These ideas that were suggested a little bit earlier, maybe one way around the cold dark matter problem is to have delayed in fall of baryons. I think we see that there are old stars in the disk, and so I don't think we can really have these extended in fall. And we can't have delayed in fall. I'm not going to be able to say any of this, so I will just end. And you can ask me about all the things I didn't say. What else did I want to say? That the, we're measuring the thin disk star formation. Much data with which to confront theory. Something that's kind of curious you might want to think about, I wasn't really going to mention this. Perhaps all the local group galaxies that we see around us started forming stars at the same time. Which is, is this true? Is this not true? Is this something you might have predicted in the theory? But just to end on a good point, I think really that almost all evidence is pointing that the initial mass function is invariant, and so that really will simplify, I think, theories of galaxy formation. And I'll stop.
Speak in the microphone when asked.
A semantic point and a question. The semantic point is, which you alluded to, is there's no alternative to have the galaxy made up of accreted parts, unless you say that the galaxy came out of a white hole, all of it collected somehow or other. So it's just a question of when and how.
Yes.
And that's true of all the pieces.
Yeah, I certainly agree with that. Yeah.
A question. Is there any evidence for a population 3 in the galaxy? Say 10^-3 or 4 of the stars of very low metallicity and a floor in the metallicity of stars that could have been formed a long time ago in an early phase before the perturbations that produced the galaxy itself came about.
Mm-hmm. Certainly in terms of the metallicity distribution of halo stars, we are seeing a few very metal-poor stars, but it's still not clear whether the number that we see is not just what you would expect from a sort of extrapolation back from the more metal-rich ones. There are some complications. It may be that when you're forming the first generations of stars, you might not actually expect there to be that very many metal-poor ones surviving, partially because there are finite main sequence contraction lifetimes of the lower-mass stars, and so you can have the type 2 supernovae going off very early. So the actual predictions, even just from population 2 type scenarios, are not that clear. In terms of population 3, if we were to further say that these should be in a different spatial distribution from population 2, then the surveys out there are really not yet constraining that. There are some very intriguing indications from things like the Sloan Digital Sky Survey that they are finding metal poor stars at very large distances.
Right. And it will be the population of stars
which have the same kinematic distribution as the dark halo
yes,
itself.
Yes, I know. That was what I was meaning. They would then have a density profile that is different from the density profile of the starlight, and there isn't the observations yet to constrain that.